I'm Sarah Marshall. I've worked with some of the world's leading brands to drive business growth. And now I'm sharing my knowledge and expertise with you. In my podcast, Lessons from the Boardroom, I talk to other successful leaders to find out how they've perfected their craft, driven success, and dealt with the challenges that leadership brings. So come on, dive in. Welcome to Lessons from the Boardroom, the podcast version. Hope everybody's okay today. I am delighted to introduce you to a favourite of mine. We were talking before we started actually about why I've asked this particular person on the podcast, and she is flipping interesting. I am happy to welcome Alison Nicol, Head of Constructing Excellence. Welcome, Alison. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I'm delighted to be asked to participate.
Only the best, my love, only the best. No pressure, eh?
I know. Yes, I feel, but I'm sure I'll relax and we'll get going.
Tell us a bit about you, how you got to be Head of Constructing Excellence, and also a bit about Constructing Excellence.
Okay, so a little bit about me. I grew up in rural Northern Ireland, and I grew up in a farming community. Wow. So from a very early age, my dad's hobby was farming, so the whole family had to get involved. So that meant that going out to work as soon as I could was better because I got paid, and they were easier taskmasters than my family. Yeah, there's lots of life lessons there, but actually it really gave me a strong work ethic and a lot of confidence and freedom because, you know, you just had to get on and do things and get things done. I stayed in Northern Ireland for university and wasn't ready to leave at that stage. I did European Business Studies, which was business studies in French, which probably you might kind of think, oh, you're not an engineer, you didn't do a STEM subject. I actually campaigned because the stream that I was in at school wasn't going to be allowed to do single award science. They were just introducing it. They wanted to run triple award science for four people and make 10 of us all do double award, which meant that I couldn't do English and English literature. And I love reading. So at 14, I started a little campaign. And
I love this.
They had to change their plans to enable us who like the arts to continue to do our, you know, double English. And, you know, the four who wanted to do that went off to another school to do their triple award science. So I guess I've always had a little bit of a campaigning spirit in me.
And how did you get to be the Head of Constructing Excellence? How did that journey happen?
So I joined BRE after university. I couldn't find a job in Northern Ireland that matched having a good degree. I graduated with first class honours, and they were trying to put me into call centres because that's what the peace deal had brought investment. But those jobs were not for graduates.
Right.
So like many people, I had to move to England. So I started working. I thought, oh, I want to do market research. And I worked for this small consultancy that did intelligent buildings consultancy. And we did the market, the European market for intelligent building controls. So within 3 weeks of starting work, I was over in Brussels without a laptop, with a massive file, going all around Belgium, interviewing people about intelligent security systems.
Yeah.
You know, you just wouldn't do that these days. Yeah. But it was, you know, apart from one incident in a restaurant with a waiter who was a little bit over-friendly. Yeah, I knew that was coming because I had lived in Belgium when I was at uni for a year. So, but, you know, all of these things, you grow and you learn from them. You've just got to embrace every opportunity that comes your way. So I got to, I then was doing action research into an intelligent and green buildings. And I was like, that? And they were doing fun things. They were doing workshops. They were engaging with the market. They were actually developing pilot projects. And an opportunity came up for me to transition over into there. And I rapidly worked out that I'm actually quite good at being a people person. I'm good at facilitating, etc. And yeah, I got involved in that side of the business, which just opened up so many more opportunities for me. We did lots of work overseas. We worked in China quite a lot. So I got this sort of really interesting role where we were sort of trying to push those boundaries and innovate. And then I joined VRE because there was a contract to run the knowledge transfer network for Innovate UK. So I was the program manager when I joined VRE for the Innovate UK project, where we were acting as the industry engagement for innovation in the built environment, helping shape calls, helping get the right partners, the right organizations to apply for funding, etc. So I did that for quite a while. I really enjoyed that because there was always something new, always something interesting. No 2 days were ever the same. And then I got offered the opportunity to join the KTM company when it was being put together, but I got a counter offer to stay at BRE to do knowledge transfer for the business. So I did a lot of work helping the BRE Trust on publications and things like that. And I did a piece of work where I was trying to get us more digitally enabled in terms of how we transferred knowledge. That was quite interesting to try and get people thinking slightly differently. And then Constructing Excellence joined BRE in 2016, and I sort of was the point person for that transition. And then by 2019, the previous MD had departed the business, and I was in charge. So yeah, that's how I got to where I am.
And can you give a brief overview of what constructing excellence is?
So Constructing Excellence is a movement that aims to bring together people from right across the built environment ecosystem who need to get the construction industry, the built environment needs to deliver in a better way. And we bring people and organizations together. It's a membership organization. We operate at a national, regional, and local levels. We've got national members. One of my leadership challenges is actually getting lots of people who are volunteers to actually engage and do things and feel valued and feel like we are valuing their input. And it's not a classic, I run an organization of X hundred people, but I have got that I've got hundreds of people all operating and delivering brilliant stuff through volunteering,
Should we dig into
essentially.
a bit more?
Yes.
So you're saying constructing excellence is about the built environment doing things better. And I know from having worked with you and BRE that the purpose of BRE is around sustainability and mitigating the impact of climate change. Does that transfer directly onto constructing excellence, or is the remit broader in terms of doing things better?
Slightly broader. It's about because the challenge we've got with the built environment, and I didn't realize this really when I was merrily working away in innovation, I couldn't understand why brilliant ideas couldn't make it through to the marketplace. And a lot of that is to do with the commercial models, the procurement methods, etc. So until we fix that as an industry, we're never going to be able to implement the innovation, the research, the technologies, until we start to do things more efficiently. So there's a lot of goodwill out there, and a lot of people really do believe in that climate action, in mitigating risk, etc. But until it gets put into contracts and until it's actually part of the DNA of the industry, and we've got the industry has got so many challenges that need to be addressed in order to make it fit for purpose. And that purpose is to deliver more resilient, more sustainable
Right.
assets.
Right. What's the stat about buildings and carbon emissions and like the risk? It's scary, isn't it?
It's about 40%, and a lot of it is to do, I can't remember what the stats are on the construction itself, but there's so many. There's life cycle
Yeah.
emissions, there's scope two, scope three emissions through the supply chain,
Yeah.
etc. There's so much to go at.
So you've got a big job, basically.
I think we're never going to get to where we want to get to. Well, we will eventually, but I think if we focus, I think what we've got to do is focus on what can we do now that will shift the dial in this, and how can we make sure that what we do now doesn't close off any avenues in the future. So
Yes.
it's that sort of, it's thinking about, how do we change now? And I think one of the big challenges is because it's such a big, multifaceted industry, there are pockets of absolute excellence. And even within companies, there's pockets of excellence.
Yes.
And then there's just people who just
Who
don't get
aren't?
it. They're who aren't. And we should sort of, I think there should be the leadership for people to actually turn around and say, actually, if you're not going to do that, we're not going to use you anymore. And for companies to say, if you're gonna, if you, if that's what you want to do, we're not gonna work with you. I think the scale of the challenge is too much, but we've got a skill shortage, we've got a recruitment and retention problem, all of which are linked
Yes.
because we've got business models that don't support development, they don't support technology. They don't manage risk properly. And actually, if we could strip out all of that, we could actually focus on delivering those better outcomes. But yeah, I think some of the challenges around recruitment and retention is linked to the perception of the industry as a very male industry.
If you say construction, people in normal language wouldn't say the built environment, but if you talk about construction, you get a very clear image in your head, don't you? And without wanting to make a sweeping generalization or a sweeping statement, you would go male, you'd think not particularly enlightened, you would have a set of prejudices in your head about the construction sector.
And that doesn't take into account the sort of the number of professionals that work in the sector. I think when the general public considers construction, they look at the operatives
Yes.
on the roads, they look at, they look at the people in vans, and it's such a big sector. You've got project, you've got highly professional, highly creative organizations, and then you've got the sort of sole traders who are going to come around and, bodge and scarper. And that is sort of perception. I think most people perceive that, and the people that they see working on the, causing them delays because of roadworks or something, how dare they fix the potholes? I think there is a really big perception problem. There are some amazing people of all ilks working in the industry, and we've got, as part of Constructing Excellence, we've got Generation for Change, which is young people. They're so inspiring, and they want to challenge. They're really bought into the sustainability aspects. They're also frustrated at the lack of uptake of technology. They really don't see why things are the way they are, because it's not logical the way things are. It's just been set up
It
to,
is what it is. Yeah.
well, but should it be what it is?
No.
That's the kind of questions that we need to ask ourselves. Just because things are that way doesn't mean that they should be that way.
It
And
becomes self-fulfilling, doesn't it?
well, it becomes self-fulfilling. I was thinking about this the other day in the context of women on sites. I don't necessarily work on in that environment. You know, some people are like, oh, well, they just have to suck it up effectively. But why should they suck it up? Why don't we strip out what's actually tough because of the job, which with modern technology probably isn't as much as people think, or if we implemented things properly, and what's actually tough because of the culture and the behaviors, and not just the sort of overt cultures, but those sort of hidden behaviors that become part of the DNA of how people interact with each other and what people's expectations are. And it comes down to quite simple things. I was at a dinner about 18 months ago, and somebody very senior was talking about all the work they had done to improve, you know, facilities, etc. And there was this man, and it had to be a man who did this because a woman couldn't possibly. And it was in the middle of the main course. What are you doing about female toilet provision, specifically when females are on their period? Because I've heard some nightmare. There's a lady on social media, and she has described, in, you know, her experience on sites and the experience of her female co-workers on sites. And you could have cut the atmosphere with a knife. But actually, we have to think about these things. And that doesn't mean that women are weaker and they can't cope. It means that we're coping with a lot more than, you know, anyone else. And we're trying to not show that these things are happening to us.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and I think I heard a shocking statistic a few years back where the average career for a woman in construction is like 4 years. So there's a lot of women who get attracted in, and then they go out because, you know, because of that culture, because of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it probably happens quite quickly. But I think what happens, it manifests as leaving in women. But construction has got the highest rate of male suicide.
So there's an endemic issue with the sector.
There's a definite issue with the culture in the sector.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've done within Constructing Excellence is actually say, well, we have to role model, whereby excellence, we've got to role model the change that we want to see.
Yeah.
That will, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
So BRE had done this amazing piece of work led by Verity on creating a behavioural framework. So we simplified that down. And there were some triggers for this, shall we say. But actually, without having something definite that you can explain to people why their behaviour, you know, constructively say, look, this is what we expect. And this is what, you know, this is where your behavior is on the sort of, it's not quite what we expect.
Yeah.
So, we simplified, we took a simplified version of that, taking two of the core values of Constructing Excellence, which were collaboration and excellence, and, you know, put that out to all of our members, all of our regions, all of our clubs to say, look, this, we know that sometimes these conversations can be difficult, but this is, you know,
framework. Yeah.
This should help with some of those things. And quite a few women actually got in touch and said, oh, this is good, because actually what you've done is describe in dispassionate language something that's really been impacting me.
Yeah.
And it's taking a sort of clinical view of some of these things. It's really difficult. Sometimes you just want to scream and and say you're out of order, but that doesn't get us anywhere.
No, the objective approach is often the better one.
But and that requires taking a step back.
Yeah. Sounds like you're learning lessons every day.
I think every negative interaction you have, you can treat as a learning opportunity. And then you can think, well, how do I make sure that this doesn't impact me? And how can I make sure that this doesn't impact other people?
Right.
Yeah, I was reflecting on, I've probably learned more from not very good leaders because I've known how they've made me feel.
Right.
It's taking
Don't
that
want to
negative.
replicate that,
I
yeah.
don't want anybody to feel like that. I used to be very sensitive. I still can be, but I do try to park it and go, okay. And the more training you have, and the more your confidence grows, the more you realize that it's usually other people's insecurities that's making you feel inadequate.
And don't let them have that power.
Yes, take that power away from them.
I think as a leader, resilience is so important. Because often you are on your own, aren't you? Often you are, as the head of the organization, it's not always easy to turn around and say to your team, I need a bit of help here, or I'm feeling a bit battered. There's a balance between being resilient and taking too much on. There's a delicate balancing act.
I think one of the things that's really helped me is during lockdown, a group of female leaders in construction got together because we were missing canapes. We were missing those sort of bumping into each other
Yes.
at things and having a chat.
Yes.
And actually, we start. There's probably a core group of 10 or 12 of us, and we all support each other, and I think all being from the same industry and experiencing the same things, we all experience different things in different ways, and lockdown was difficult for everybody. I haven't laughed as much on calls, I haven't cried as much on calls, but we will all support each other
Yeah.
and try and it's almost like a self-help group in some ways because you sort
Safe
of,
place.
it's the same place, but also a place to share
Yeah.
joy and,
I should probably ask you the questions I'm supposed to be asking on this podcast. I'm having
Oh,
too much of a good time just talking. Right, we were just talking then about one of the best things that you did was during lockdown and finding your tribe, so to speak. The first question I have for you is, what do you think the best lesson is that you've learned as a leader?
I think the best lesson I've learned as a leader is, I know we talked about be authentic, but actually to realize that my opinion is valid and to realize that, I have, you've got to take other people's opinions on board, but ultimately you've got to make decisions and own your actions and own the outcomes of those actions.
Did you not think your opinion was valid?
Well, I think a lot of this got in construction.
Yeah.
Lot of people, there's a lot of, I'm an engineer, I'm an architect, and they're all vying. And there's a lot of pomposity.
Oh, nice word.
Big words. But there's a lot of people who are projecting,
Yeah.
and especially in that male environment. Pre-lockdown in rooms, when you used to go into rooms, there were men who would use their physical bulk
Yeah,
to
lots of
make
flick
them feel
waving going on.
insignificant. And I think there's a lot of that. And actually, when you dig down, that a lot of their need to do that is their own insecurity, but actually that's their problem.
But
They've
Ali, you're the head of constructing excellence.
I know, but I've
You
seen.
didn't like nobody turned around one day and go, oh, we'll do her a favor, poor love. Here we go. You have that job. You got that job because you deserve that job.
I know, but I think actually having a little bit of insecurity is good because it drives you to work harder. It's whenever it becomes debilitating. But I think you've got to keep pushing yourself outside your comfort zone.
I mean, that is a really good point about growing into yourself because we are not born chief execs. We're not born MDs. We're not born leading an organization. And you do, like, as leaders, We're YTS, we're trainees on the job, aren't we, to a certain degree? And yeah. And being cognizant, accepting, aware, vocal to a certain degree that you're learning every day as the head of is, I think, is a really powerful thing.
Lockdown, COVID, it helped me to sort of think, actually, I can control what I can control, but actually I've got to be agile to those external factors and not beat myself up if something external comes in and I have to then change what we're doing, or we need to have a fundamental rethink. Yeah. And I think that comes from that ability to change change focus, etc. As long as you've got your vision and your mission.
Yeah.
I think lockdown's really, I think that started this period of tumultuousness that we still continue in today, I think. Yeah. I don't think we're ever going to get back to steady state in terms of...
It's a different state, isn't it?
It's a different state.
Yeah.
And I think people respond differently to different sort of ways of communicating, ways of engaging with them, ways of bringing them together. Mm. And I think...
This is an interesting point about being dynamic in your leadership.
Yeah.
You don't go to work on Monday and go, right, these are the static rules that now apply forever. Because that's not empathetic leadership, is it? That's not a leader who understands individuals' changing requirements and needs.
Yeah.
And as a leader, all of our jobs is reliant on the people that we work with and getting the best out of those people, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, we've got to find ways keep people engaged, make sure that they're getting fulfilled. And, I do think people should enjoy work. I really do. And, something like Constructing Excellence, it's a membership organization. I want our members to enjoy their interactions with us. I want them to come away feeling that they've got some insight, they've created some connections, but also that it was a good experience.
Because they don't have to be a member, right?
No. Yeah, we've got to keep retaining them. Yeah. And one of the things that I said to one of our regions had a bit of an overhaul recently, and the atmosphere has changed completely. And I said to them, I would be happy to send the graduates that I mentor to this dinner. I wouldn't have said that 5 years ago. Yeah. And, I think that's, would you send a member of your team to something?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if the answer is no, you've got to think, well, why am I here?
Yeah. 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 Well, why am I taking the pain?
Yeah. And why should we take the pain?
Yeah.
The world needs to move on, and I've had some very difficult conversations with some people about this.
Mm.
Somebody who felt that all this inclusivity was not inclusive to people like them. And there is a valid point there. Mm. The world has shifted so far from where it used to be. And you've got these annoying women like us in positions of authority, and we're saying, don't get comedians because not everybody finds the same things funny. Don't do that,
Or think, just think a bit more.
Just think a bit more. And, I can't play golf, And
do you want to?
Oh, no, can't think of anything worse.
We were talking about pain a minute ago. Tell me about the hardest lesson that you've ever learned.
Oh, that's probably been to not let other people get in my head.
Ooh, and not let other people. That's a good one.
Well, I did deal with someone who was bullying me. They had wanted my role.
Right.
And their their way of dealing with that was to completely undermine me at every turn.
Right.
And I think I let them get, you know, they were playing some, you know, it was never them, it was other people weren't happy about decisions I had made. Other people, it was all very, you know, and actually, eventually, I spoke to these other people who apparently hated me, and it wasn't, there was no truth in it. And for years, I gave that person, because you take people at face value, that what they're telling you is correct.
And you gave them space in your head.
I gave them space in my head. And this person would send emails at 5 o'clock on a Friday that would, you know, take my headspace for a good part of my weekend, because I'd be thinking, oh my goodness, you know, oh, how am I going to deal with this one?
Yeah.
You know, and actually, you shouldn't give those people space in your, that's not to say that you should ignore people and their opinions and the validity of their opinions. But if you feel like somebody's trying to undermine you, you need to really detach yourself from the emotion of it. But then we do get emotional, because emotion's what drives us to do a good job.
Yeah, and there's nothing, emotions per se are not a bad thing. It's how you use those emotions, isn't it?
Yes.
Tell me, how did you do this? So this is your hardest lesson.
Yes.
How did you move on from there? How did you get rid of this person from your head?
From my head. I had a really good boss, actually, who sat down and looked at the evidence and said, this is bullying. You know, even though this person is sort of slightly outside of the organization. And, you know, that was how we sort of moved that on.
And so giving it a label helped in a way.
It did. It really did. Because then I was sort of, because I thought that I wasn't tough enough, that I wasn't, you know, that I felt angry with myself for letting this get to me.
I can think of probably hundreds of examples of when I've let somebody get into my head and how I've allowed them to take my energy, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm better at it now.
Yeah.
And I think with age, there does come a bit of, it's not that you don't give a shit, but you're less tolerant of things, I think.
I think you've also got more confidence to say, actually.
Yeah.
They're saying that, but actually,
why are they saying that now?
Yeah, and it's usually nothing to do with you, other than you might be a threat. It's usually because you're a threat.
So let's say you're talking to your 30-year-old self, and you're at work, and you've let somebody get into your head. What would you say to your 30-year-old self?
I would say to my, so many things I would say to my 30-year-old self. Like, switch that work phone off when you're out with your friends. You know, just because, you know, you've got this connectivity, you know, just stop being reactive to everything that comes in. Take some time, think about things, be more intentional in what you do. And you can't keep everybody happy. And I think as women, we're programmed to be people pleasers. I mean, it's really interesting when you see how traditionally women were raised. We were raised to sort of be supportive. Somebody once sent me this book. It was about relationships. And it was about how...
Somebody to send you a book on relationships.
Oh, well, it got thrown across the room multiple times. And all of my friends who read it were like, this is just ridiculous. And it was things like, don't show strong opinions. Wait for a man to do something, do things for you, because men like that.
Well, when was this written?
It was written by 15 years ago, so not that quite modern. It was a modern take on, and you can see some of this seeping into social media, and you know, you've got some of this coming through through into society that, you know, women should be not as outspoken as we are. And
oh dear.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, we pushed to put that to one side, I think. And now we're in a world where things can go backwards for women.
You said earlier, before we started recording, you said rights are transient. And we didn't think that, did we, Ali? Like,
no.
I think that as a woman of a certain age who's had a very successful career, that the rights of females are solidly set. But they're not, are they?
They're not. And I think we're probably very fortunate to live in the UK. But that doesn't mean that rights can't be eroded. And I think societal attitudes in some quarters go backwards. And I think social media is, I'm so glad that I was a teenager before social media came out. But I do feel really sorry for those young women coming through who feel the need to be perfect at absolutely everything, to look perfect, to communicate perfectly. You know, it's just so, there's not as much room.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, I just can't, yeah. I feel really sorry for those young women. And I feel like we should be creating an environment where younger people can flourish. And, you know, create workplaces that are actually going to allow them to not have to go through some of the nonsense that we've had to go, you know, we've got to open doors for people.
Not close them on the way through.
Yeah, not close them. And I think we can do that by continuing to be approachable and open and, you know, not be that scary person. When I first started my career, a lot of the female leaders had to take on really blokey personas, and they were quite scary. And it was sort of like, oh, I don't think I want to be one of those.
I was like that at Barclays.
Were you?
Yeah, yeah. There were. So when I kind of went from the management grade to the senior exec grade, there were 400 senior execs, and only there were less than 40 females senior execs, and I was one of them. Yeah. And I did for a while. I not quite emulated male behaviour, but I tried to be part of that club. Didn't work, clearly. But yeah, there was a lot of trying to fit in to the establishment, and the establishment was a male establishment.
I do feel like earlier in my career, I got the Irish jokes in. I allowed myself to be the butt of my own jokes because otherwise those jokes were going to be on me, and I get ahead of it.
Yeah,
I would never do that now.
No, because that devalues yourself.
Yes, but at that time, you're thinking that's what, I'm one of the boys, and actually you're not when it comes to it.
You're not, for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, I mean, when those boys got married, I was sent to the hen parties and they had this, you know.
Bearing all of that in mind, what advice would you give to a young leader coming up now, or somebody who has, you know, got the potential to be a leader in the future, male or female?
Thinking about how your actions impact on other people. So thinking about your role as a leader, it's not about you. It's about getting the best out of those around you. At the same time, how you behave and how you interact has a huge impact on that. So you've got to make sure that you're resilient and that you've got those outlets. You know, just throwing yourself at work doesn't get you to the right place.
What's next for Ali? What's next for Alison?
I don't know. I think I've always taken opportunities when they've come my way and put myself into that position where you should say yes to things even if they're not in your comfort zone. So I don't know what is next, but I'm very excited to find out. I think as long as I'm moving things forward and I'm not stuck in a rut, and I think you become stuck in a rut when you're not driving things forward. But I do think one thing that has really helped over the past few years is me growing in my own confidence. I don't know what's next, but I think it could be quite fun.
Sounds like whatever is next for Ali is going to be joyful, successful. And, you know, I think you're one of the most empathetic people that I've spoken to on the podcast. It's been a lovely conversation,
I know, it's been fun. I hate talking about me because it's sort of, you know, it doesn't come easily, but it's been really nice.
Good. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. I know our listeners will enjoy it. And I am sure the construction sector is going to be far better for more of you, young lady.
Oh, yeah, there's a long way to go. I mean, I think that's the thing. You know, there's so far to go. You know, it's sort of late adopter syndrome on a lot of things.
Stick with it. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you.